A prime minister resigns in Ukraine, the Panama Papers continue to reverberate in Russia, and the Crimean Tatars hold a congress in Lithuania. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFRL. Joining me in the studio is senior RFRL editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Brian.
And also with me is Pavel Butorin, managing editor of RFRL's Russian language television program, Current Time. Welcome, Pavel.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So Arseniy Yatsenyuk has finally resigned as prime minister of Ukraine, setting the stage for political horse trading, political intrigue, and potentially political instability. Yatsenyuk says he will support parliamentary speaker Volodymyr Groysman, and he will keep his party, the People's Front, in the ruling coalition. So far, so good. Although the West, on the other hand, and many Maidan activists have been hoping for Finance Minister Natalia Yaresko to be named prime minister. Steve, where do you see this going?
Well, I think, it's obviously unclear for now. And the resignation of Yatsenyuk and apparent arrival of Groysman as prime minister, does set the stage potentially for kind of reform, a move towards changes that need to be made. It gets rid of the situation where, or at least it potentially alleviates a situation where it could open up the way to unblocking Western aid. There's several caveats. One is that we don't really know. Groysman, he has pledged to support reform, but what that's actually going to look like in real life, is far less clear.
Given his ties to the oligarchs,
exactly.
A lot of suspicions about him.
So the question is whether whether things become more normal or just more abnormal, and you have a shift towards more oligarch power, and then a key person here obviously is Poroshenko. This change gives him more power potentially and more kind of a monopoly on power. So, and what is he going to do with that? He could use it for good, I guess, to kind of push things that need to be done. But on the other hand, he could just use it in another way. And he may, again, Ukraine could get even more embroiled in kind of the oligarchs, oligarchical rule and corruption. So, and of course, the populists are not going to go anywhere. So you have, all these potential problems.
Yeah, you could see also. I could see a backlash from the Maidan activists from
exactly.
civil society. What do you make of Yuresko's name just disappearing? Looked like a done deal a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's obviously that would have been sort of far more reassuring for the West and for some in Ukraine. So I'm not sure what's behind that, but it's obviously potentially I think the figure of Groysman creates far more sort of uncertainty going forward.
Pavel, what are your thoughts on this? I'm sure you guys are all over this.
We're very much following the story. And you know what? One only has to wonder whether Yatsenyuk's resignation had anything to do with this, visa-free deal now in the works with the European Union.
Well, that's interesting that's going forward despite the Dutch referendum.
I know, and the European Commission apparently will propose this month granting visa-free travel to Ukrainians, and this is according to a senior EU source who spoke to Reuters. And like you said, this is happening despite the Dutch referendum vote against an EU-Ukraine agreement. This is the most tangible benefit of closer ties offered to Ukraine by the EU so far. The visa-free proposal must be approved by a majority of EU member states and by the European Parliament to take effect. Interestingly, EU states will maintain a mechanism to reinstate visa requirements in case of a surge of migration. It will be interesting to see whether the Czech Republic approves visa-free travel for Ukrainians. You know, there's a large Ukrainian community here and a lot of Ukrainian workers, some documented, some not. So we expect to follow the story closely.
Yeah, no, this is it's an important, and that is another important aspect of the Ukrainian story, because as you say, the visa-free is one thing the Ukrainians care about more than almost anything. They want that ability to travel to Europe freely. Moving on to our another theme, the revelations in the Panama Papers continue to reverberate in Russia. Steve, what did you make of Putin's first public statement on the matter last week? Is this going to hurt him or help him going forward?
Well, I don't think it'll hurt or help him significantly. I mean, I think he's not going to. I don't think he's sort of made more enemies or more friends by kind of with what he said about it. I mean, you know, many people in Russia are going to have and have shown the kind of response of, well, this is the way it is here, and you know that's fine. In the West, obviously, you know, this adds to the kind of the impression and the evidence of corruption, you know, in Putin's circle and with Putin himself. But I think, I mean, the fact that he did speak out about it or speak about it in such a somewhat organized way at this
People's Front meeting.
It was obviously a planned statement. I mean, to me, I'm not saying it proves it at all, but that's kind of possibly evidence in favor of this idea that Russia could possibly have been behind it. Because, I mean, he seemed to be quite ready with a somewhat specific statement about.
Although his comments were ridiculous, that the Verdugin board used the money to buy musical instruments.
Right. I mean, you know, but I think, yes, they were ridiculous. But I think, I mean, for many people who are, you know, watching, you know, Russians watching Russian TV, you know, it's just sort of par for the course. Mm. And I don't think. But on the other hand, I would like to say, I mean, I think there's something missing in these arguments that are cropping up every time now that, okay, well, you know, this isn't going to bring down Putin, okay, or the previous kind of revelation about his allies, you know, basically finding housing and apartments for quote unquote his women. I mean, these things, yes, it's true, you know, everyone now comes out and says, okay, this isn't going to hurt Putin, it's going to help him. But I mean, I think, you know, if these things start to add up,
yeah,
I mean,
no, this is
not going to bring him down. But I mean, look, I think the one about his, you know, the women in his life. I mean, that's going into his personal, you know, his relatives, his close family. This is exactly what he doesn't want getting out.
Right.
So I think, you know, the kind of statements that, okay, this isn't going to hurt him at all, are overblown. And I think many Russians, like, yes, they're taking this position now that, you know, this is the way it is here and he's our leader. But, you know, in the end, that could all disappear as well. So,
yeah, it is what it is. Yeah, that's the sort of.
He's safe until he's not.
Well, you know, this past weekend, Russian TV actually gave the floor to Roldugin himself,
yeah,
a cello player who has more money than Taylor Swift. And
fourth richest musician in the world, yeah, after Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger, and Bono, according to the tweet I saw last week.
And
if
you
saw it in
the
tweet, it must be true.
That's right. Yeah, and he said that some unnamed patrons offered him a share in their businesses so he could make some money to support Russian music. And so he has been apparently bringing rare musical instruments to Russia, probably bypassing customs to give them to music schools. I'd like to know how many Russian kids have been playing Stradivarius.
Right. You know, so.
And it's interesting that the same report actually suggested that Russian money circulated in South American offshore companies as part of a special FSB operation to bring some of Russian money back to Russia.
Right. So the spin, do you see the spin as effective, Pavel? I mean, is this playing well with the Russian public?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about this culture of passive acceptance.
Passive acquiescence. Yeah. I mean, one thing that makes me think that they are a little bit more nervous about it than they're letting on is the report last night on Navalny on Kislyov's program on Vesti. Where they're saying Navalny is tied to William Browder and is works for British intelligence, that tells me they're nervous about the corruption issue, because what's Navalny's bread and butter, but corruption. We'll see this week. We got Putin's annual call-in program on Thursday, so that's always your annual opportunity to look at what's on the Kremlin's agenda and what's on their mind. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that.
And I think one reason, sorry to break in, but I think one reason Putin may have spoken about this the Panama Papers last week, I guess, was to get it out of the way ahead of
the call-in,
so that he doesn't have to, you know, go into detail about that. You know, and as you your point that they may be more nervous than they let on. I think the Kremlin's preparations for these leaks certainly showed that. Where Peskov was saying, "Look, this stuff is coming out.
Yeah.
Peskov telegraphed it before. You know, if they weren't nervous, they wouldn't have said anything.
Right. Well, we'll see, and that call-in will certainly be worth watching this week. And finally, Pavel, I know current time has a report coming up on the Crimean Tatar Congress in Vilnius, the Lithuanian capital. Fill us in on the details, would you?
I'll be really brief. We will be covering that Congress. It opened today in Vilnius. The event is hosted at a very high level by the Lithuanian parliament. The foreign minister will also be in attendance. It's worth noting that since Russia's annexation of the Crimean Peninsula, some Crimean Tatar leaders, including current Mejlis leader Refat Chubarov and the much-revered veteran Crimean leader, Soviet-era dissident Mustafa Jamilov, have been banned from entering their homeland by Russia-installed authorities. A Crimean court will soon be hearing a case about banning the Mejlis, which is the self-governing body of the Crimean Tatars, as an extremist organization. At the same time, an organization called the Alliance of Tatars in Europe last week hosted a forum in Brno here in the Czech Republic aimed at bringing together the Tatar emigre community in Europe. And the alliance is actually sponsored by the Russian Foreign Ministry. Mm-hmm. And alliance leaders called on the forum participants to work on improving Russia's image abroad. Right. So are we following all these events?
All right, no, that'll be interesting. It's interesting to see the Tatars kind of settling in a European country and carrying out their affairs from there. You understand you have a good piece this week on bad Russian drivers as well. Is that, it's something
there's a vigilante group trying to fight bad Russian drivers driving on sidewalks.
Interesting video. I suggest everybody have a look at it. And on that note, we'll wrap it up. And that's all we have time for today, so we'll wrap it up. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast. Joining me in the studio has been senior RFRL editor Steve Gutterman and Pavel Butorin, managing editor of RFRL's Russian language television program Current Time, which you can watch at www.currenttime.tv. Join us again next week, and now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.